All right, ready?
In 3, 2, 1.
Everything from overlanding in your stock rig to full-on LS-powered to buggies on stickies. This is the Total Offroad Podcast. I'm Steve.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Mike, and you're listening to episode 209.
Watching you two sort that out with sign language was fantastic.
We figured it out.
For some context, I hit record. We were in the middle of a conversation. Steve is like, we're doing it now. He did the intro, and Mike and I didn't know which order we were going in. And we worked it out just with webcams.
I couldn't tell if Mike was a catcher or what was going on there. I was like, is that a... no, it's
fastball. Curveball.
Oh, yeah.
Oh man.
So man, anyway, episode 209, all three of us are on here. That's kind of cool.
It's pretty cool.
It's a Tuesday. Get some recording. We all have done nothing.
Not true.
Oh, Mike's done things, which is actually pretty impressive because Mike hadn't done things.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. For once, Mike's the one that's doing stuff.
Look at you go.
Mike also had some problems.
Oh, yeah.
Problems. I can't wait to hear about it.
Oh, man.
So are we doing housekeeping first, or would you do off-road first? We're
housekeeping.
Okay.
Hit him with the keeping of the house.
Do we have any Patreon shout-outs? Otherwise, I have non-Patreon shout-outs. Maybe Patreon shout-outs and non... They're not paid... Ah, I don't know. I want to shout out some people that added me since the last episode.
Okay. Let's go.
So last episode, we talked about the suspenseful suspension dilemmas that both Mike and Ike were dealing with. And Steven Sinks sent in the Patreon chat a video that Fred Williams posted it like the same day that I think the podcast went live too, showing what looked like a sway bar with shocks on it. And I was like, what the heck is it? So I watched it. And Fred Williams has probably the most advanced Jeep suspension system. I don't know, in his noob sock Jeep, the JL two door that looks like tube sock.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget the brand. I don't have the video open. I probably should have done my research, but I did it a week ago. It's like a controlled system or a system that's controlled in the cab, that like a Cadillac or, you know, a Corvette, he can adjust the like damping ratio of the shocks, you know, and he can put it in like Baja mode, rock crawling mode, highway mode. Which is cool as hell, right? I think it's just like there's one plug going into the shocks. It's probably like a magnetic oil that, you know, firms up or firms down, you know, gets softer.
Firms down,
gets softer, same thing. And they have it tuned, obviously, for the different scenarios, and it presumably is tuned very well for Jeeps. But he was trying out as he was going to Moab a new system that also integrates the sway bar disconnect. So what looks like a shock, I think, is like a hydraulic lockout probably. And it connects into his, anti-rock sway bar. So it looks like a link, but with a shock on it, it replaces the link and it looks like a shock. And it just has a two prong plug on it that connects into the system. And he was saying that like, depending on the mode that you're in will automatically disconnect and reconnect the sway bar. So if you're on the road, like the street mode, it would disconnect the sway bar when you're below 10 miles an hour. So when you're like pulling into like a parking lot that has a big ramp, it doesn't like throw you to the side. It like lets the axle articulate a little bit. And then the second you go above 10 miles an hour, it re-engages the sway bar.
That's cool.
And when you're in rock crawling mode, it's like 20-ish miles an hour. And then when you're in like Baja mode, it's like, you know, I think he said like 45 maybe or something like that. So, but yeah, it like connects into the ECU. And since that Jeep has like electronically assisted steering, it connects into that too. And so it knows like what your steering angle is, and it knows what your speed is, and it knows like what you're doing with accelerating and braking, and it can do these changes to the dampers like really quickly. It didn't really say how quickly, but it made it seem like it was pretty quickly. So pretty neat. Like, I don't know how much that system costs. And after I'm done talking, I'll like pull up the YouTube video and see what brand it is. And maybe figure out the cost for it. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Like,
sounds nuts.
Sounds expensive, and it definitely sounds nuts, but it's pretty neat. I want it.
Too intense for me. I don't want it.
Why not? It's one of those things where, I guess because go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. I was like, would it be net? Like, would it be even worth it for leaf springs?
No, absolutely not. But for a JL, they did their homework, like designing that system for that Jeep, so it probably works really well for that Jeep. For a one-off, I think it probably wouldn't work that well, especially with leaf springs. It's not worth it.
No, you just have a clunky old pickup truck and you go off-road and at the end.
Yep.
Jeez.
My pickup truck hasn't even left the garage. I'm sad about it.
That's a clunky old pickup truck. What are you going to do?
Yep. Here's a question. Should I air up my tires in the garage? They're still at 10 PSI.
If you leave them deflated for a long time and they're radials. Are they radials?
Yep.
Okay. I'm not sure. It's probably, I think any tire can flat spot, right?
Yeah.
It's like even guys with like cars, collector cars, they get like those rounded things to park on, right? Because that like helps the tires not flat spot.
Oh yeah. Or like just put it up on jack stands.
I mean, you could just put it up on jack stands. Be like the rest of us. Come on, Derek.
Could do
my
that.
Truck's on just, jack stands.
I could just air them up.
Hey, speaking Steve, of jack stands.
Steve, we can't hear you.
Uh-oh.
My bad.
There,
Steve, don't mute yourself.
You're trying to multitask.
Right, before we change subjects, it's Suspension Direct Inc. SDI. And I'm still trying to figure out, I probably should have waited to say that, but I'm trying to figure out what the it's called the E-Click system. And they make them for like Raptors and Jeeps. And Toyotas. Looks like it's not as expensive as I thought. Ford Bronco Raptor E-Click Pro System, $2,100. Oh, I wonder if that ties into the shocks that are already there. Okay, here. Okay, this would probably work for my truck. All right, are you ready?
Yes.
SDI E-Click for F53 chassis motorhomes.
F53 chassis.
Oh,
that's what Derek has, an F53 chassis.
I mean, it probably weighs similar, right? So this is the, what the heck, F53 stripped motorhome chassis. Yeah, it's like a medium duty like ladder frame chassis. It's a
never
Ford.
Heard of it. Yeah, like you would think, like, oh, it's an F5300 or F530. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
how
yeah,
to
yeah.
F3, like, wait, what?
I mean, I saw the number and I was like, oh, maybe it's a Freightliner, you know? But no, it's a Ford. Oh, it's got the 7.3 gas. Yeah.
I mean, it could be on a Freightliner chassis. No?
I don't think Ford and Freightliner have any connection, though, you know?
Could be.
I mean, Ford makes like medium duty trucks.
I feel like
Ford really did.
Yeah.
Anyway, that might work.
They definitely did. At one time, this, Ford made
Ford and Freightliner at some point. That's okay. True, they did, but were they Freightliners?
No, they were Fords.
Okay, well then who knows?
Like the
okay,
Ford,
so,
what is it, LA?
The SDI system looks to be between $4 and $5,500 for most vehicles. So that's not that bad. I mean, I was budgeting $4,000 for like full custom shocks. Granted, those, the ones I'm getting probably have a lot more travel than most of these, because these are like sort of bolt-on systems, but considering the technology, it's not too shabby.
Buy it and make it work with your truck. It, travel be damned. You don't need all that travel.
You don't need travel. Raptors. That's unnecessary.
Exactly.
You don't order the Raptor kit and just get two rear shocks or two rear shock pairs. Jesus, I can't talk.
Sure.
Yeah.
You do you, boo.
Yep. Anyway, I thought that was neat. So it's a lot of money, but has a lot of technology. So cool. We should talk about the sad thing.
The fact that it's tied. Oh, yeah. You do that.
Well,
So apparently in Baltimore, a freight or a cargo ship hit the bridge and took the bridge out. So yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. And they say 6 presumed dead, at least on their article I'm reading. I mean, this happened like last night.
Yeah,
basically. So, it's all pretty new, as we're recording this, of course. So definitely, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to the families of those affected. And I guess it happened at the best possible time that it could have, because
like, no doubt.
If there was traffic on that bridge or something like that, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine. So, but that doesn't, you know, it's still terrible.
It's tragic regardless, but
yeah, it's tragic regardless.
It could have been a lot worse.
That's right.
Derek is way better at words than I are.
Yeah, I'm not that good at words, which is why I just had to pause and like think about what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
So it's sad, man.
It's definitely that. It's, and like I'm thinking to myself, I'm watching that happen. Obviously, the lives are the biggest loss there. But then you think about some of the other things that are going to surround that. Like now that bridge that was likely heavily trafficked is now like it's gone. So where's all that traffic got to go? You have to, your commute that was maybe 10, 20 minutes before is now an hour and a half to get home every day for the next 2-3 years.
Oh yeah. It's not like they're going to build that bridge back overnight.
If anybody worked or like lived in Brooklyn Park or like the housing, you know, area that was on the west side of the bridge and worked on the east side of the bridge, they're going to have to find new jobs. I think like it's a long way
to the around. Other bridge.
Yeah. I don't even know. I'm not familiar enough with Baltimore, but, I'm just looking at the map and it's like, it connected a lot of people.
Yeah, that's nuts. I'm not sure what those guys are going to do.
That's a fact.
Yep. So, thoughts and prayers for all of Baltimore, and especially the 6-ish, hopefully not more, families that were affected.
Man, that's like the scariest thing to think about. You know, you often see videos of people talking about cars like going into water and like how long you have to get out and how you get out and stuff. And like, man, I fear that all the time. Like, I mean, like, I don't plan to go into water anytime, you know, but I do cross a bridge every day across the Wabash to like go to work. And I always think like, man, what if something happened and I had to like get me and Elliot out of the truck? And that just like makes me sick thinking about it.
Yeah. Emily has to cross a bridge when she goes to her improv classes, and it's once a week or twice a week sometimes, and it's like it's the bay, like it's not as cold as the ocean, but it's still cold, and it's like a mile long bridge, right? So like,
oh man,
you're in the middle of it, like that's I don't know what happens, let's put it that way.
Yeah not great.
So
I did not look at the map until now of where that bridge is at.
Ooh,
That's a major highway.
Yeah. So Baltimore is like at the tip of like the Patapsco River. Sorry for butchering this, which is basically like an inlet, right? And then you know, there's this water inlet sort of points towards the city center of Baltimore, and it goes, you know, up and to the left, right? So northwest. The Francis Scott Key Bridge that collapsed was like, is 695. It's like a loop that almost loop that goes all the way around Baltimore, like pretty far out. And that bridge connected, you know, one side to the other. And so it's, you know, southeast of Baltimore. And it's like one of the main ways to get around. The next closest bridge is like the 895. And it's
way up there.
Way up there. So
Google Maps be like, this bridge is temporarily closed.
Mine says Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, exclamation point. Updated 4 hours ago. That's what it says on my Google Maps.
Oh, wow. Mine just says temporarily closed.
Oh, it's wow.
That's wild that yours says it on the maps.
I'd like to report a problem on Francis Scott Key Bridge.
It's non-existent. Oh, that is wild to even just like to see that, to watch something that can hold so much weight. And as soon as you take out that one support, the entire thing just.
Oh yeah. Folded. It was like nothing like someone.
It makes complete sense from an engineering standpoint. Like it makes complete sense. Like it's not made to not have that support.
It's also not made to hold weight in that direction on that support.
Yeah. I'm sure just all of that in general, just like it's like a sphere. As soon as you dimple it, it loses all of its, you know, structure. Yeah, rigidity. It's like, man, that is wild. Just to see something that, and at first when I watched the video the first time, like, I didn't understand how big it was. I didn't understand that was a container ship that hit it. And then as I started seeing other videos, I started seeing how big that bridge actually was, and paying attention to the lights going across it, I was like, oh man, that's a big ass bridge.
Yeah, man.
And the height. And the height of the bridge. Two things, right? That had to be 100 feet off the water.
Yeah, probably.
The bridge is crazy long. How long is that bridge?
Well, part of it is concrete, but I don't know. Long?
Length. How long is it? 57,000 feet long.
That's a lot.
10 miles?
What?
10 miles? No, wait, no, yeah?
That's not right.
No. Yeah, that's 5,000. How many feet are in a mile?
5,700 feet long?
57,546 feet is the total length of the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Okay, cool. So if you look at that, so if you look at either side of where the actual bridge structure is, it's all concrete. So that may be the case. It may be a bridge for a long ass time.
Oh, it's just that the section of it that fell.
It's the section that was
less than that.
Yeah. That's insane.
That's not, just no, it's the main span, 1,200 feet. Was the third longest span of any continuous truss in the world. Total length, 8,600 feet. So,
okay,
like a mile and a half.
1.6 miles is how long the section is that fell.
That fell?
No. The longest span is 1,200 feet.
Haha.
Quarter mile.
Then so, I don't know why when you look at Francis Scott Key Bridge length, it tells you 57.
I don't either. It did for me too. I had to click on the Wikipedia article. The total length of the bridge is 1.6 miles. The longest span is 1,200 feet. I assume it's like the longest span plus a couple of spans past that. So it was probably close to 2,000 feet that fell.
Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what you do if you can't take that bridge. I'm all similarly looking at the map and thinking like, okay, so you're over here and I'm going to say it's on Dundalk and you somehow have to get to Tanyard Cove. Well, your commute just went from like 30 minutes to like 2.5 hours or something. Like, I mean, what do you even do? Like, you can't work there anymore. You have to find a new job. I mean, I feel bad for the people that died, but yeah, I feel bad for anybody that had to use that bridge. So,
yep,
man, that could really fuck your life up.
Things you don't think of until they happen.
Insane.
Oh, all right. That was definitely a tragedy. I mean, I can't talk. Should we talk about something a little bit more positive?
So speaking of jack stands.
Jeez. Oh, no.
I've been looking at, for the longest time, these pipe stands. You know what I'm talking about when I say a pipe stand? Like, I don't know what they're designed for. So something that's not off-road. And it's got like a V at the top and it's designed to hold a pipe up in some industrial application. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. You can, you know, support your rig with it. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess you could. And they do get very tall. And that seemed to be the solution. But just recently, I realized that SunX and probably some other brands make just tall jack stands. Like, it's not like they're crazy. You know, like, it's not like the weight capacity is 100,000 pounds because they're tall. They're just made for like a truck or even a semi.
Yeah, they're like, but they're just tall. Right?
They might be 6 to, I think some of them are even a little bit more than that, but they are just tall jack stands. And you can even get them in several different heights from like low, medium, and high, depending on just how high your project is. And the price is more reasonable than going to pipe stands. And so
10 ton. They're 10 ton and they come in low, medium, and high. And even low is quite a lot, right? And they have a lot of travel too.
Yeah, exactly. And so I've been thinking, since Snow Day is currently on jack stands, and the jack stands are probably close to their max height, because I had to get the truck high enough on the frame to support it with the weight of the leaf springs off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of a tricky process, but I got it done with not high jack stands. And I was thinking, man, it'd be really convenient to have some jack stands tall enough that they could pick up like the back of the frame, you know, where it's really high.
Yep. They're like,
I haven't bought any yet.
$300 for two, which for the tall ones, which is like a pretty good deal considering that they're 10 ton, right?
Yeah, they support a lot of weight and they're very tall and probably safer than building something yourself, or at least easier. I mean, I shouldn't say safer. You could honestly, most of the guys that listen to this podcast can probably weld better than the Chinese that are making these SunX jack stands. No offense. China does produce some okay stuff, but I'm just saying that, like, if you're going to weld something, you're going to get under, you're going to make sure as hell that it's a good weld. Whereas these are like, good enough, send it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that they're way over engineered too, so that like, if there's a bad weld that goes out, like, they can still hold the 10 tons or whatever.
It won't be like the Harbor Freight jack stand debacle.
Yeah, right. Like, they saw that and they're like, we better double wrap these guys, you know?
Yeah, they should do something.
Double band them. But these are, like, in my opinion, these are a better design because, like, it's not a stamped piece of steel. It's like tubes with, like, a strap, you know, welded around them. But anyway, yeah, those are on my list. They're part of my budget if I link the truck, because I'm just going to throw the front end on those jack stands and not have to worry about them being in the way or teeter tottery and all that crap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're nice. So if you get a pair, I'd be curious to see what you think of them.
I would like to, but this is probably hopefully the last project for a while. I'm doing Remen and need a tall jack stand. And actually, I didn't really need a tall jack stand. It just would have been nice to have a tall jack stand.
Speaking of garage things, I had a thought because I was like, I'm broken, but like, I could rebuild the transfer case. I just can't get the dang 180-pound transfer case out of the truck in my condition. And even if I could, how would I get it up on a workbench? Because like, I can't lift that. Even before I was injured, like, I can't lift that.
Motorcycle jack down, hoist up, done.
I was thinking one of those like worn, like drill winch, or maybe it's not worn, but like a drill winch attached to the ceiling. Like 180 pounds, I can hang from the ceiling, right? Like, and it's not gonna.
Yeah.
But that would totally be able to just like yoink, and then
like
and
a
then.
Pull-zall.
Yeah, like a pull-zall, and then I actually have my workbench on casters now. So you just you lift it up, you roll the workbench under it, you drop it down.
Oh,
done.
Nice! I like it.
So I just got to get a pull-zall or whatever.
I mean, I think that the pull-zall, Ian had one back in the day, and it's just like a little baby winch, but it had its own motor. You didn't have to hook it up to a drill.
Oh, okay.
It was just like, I don't know if it was battery operated or if you plugged it into the wall. I don't know, it was 120 or 12 volt, whatever the case, but it was just, you know,
they
just
make
a little guy. And
to make a 24 volt or a 115. So
115 pulls
or 120, whatever. Same thing. They are approximately $230 on Amazon for Warren. And they pulled 1,000 pounds. That's pretty good.
It's not bad. That would do the trick.
It'd be enough, I think, to collapse a, you know, 2x4 in the middle of the span, at least.
Dude, with this thing, that's if you had a strong enough rafter, you could pick up like an axle. You could pick up a loaded fucking Dana 60 or something like that with this thing. If you pick up 1,000 pounds.
Yeah. Or a engine. Small engine, like an LS.
Yeah, pick up an engine, pick up a transmission, pick up an axle. Like most powertrain components, this thing could handle. That'd be pretty cool. I mean, even a big engine. Like, do you think that a Duramax or like a Cummins weighs 1,000 pounds? I doubt it. I mean, they're probably pretty heavy, but I don't think they're 1,000 pounds.
Probably not. Dressed, maybe. Like with turbo and downpipe and like, but you'd take all that stuff off. Accessory drive, maybe. Like an alternator weighs like 50 pounds, right? Like a big one, 30 pounds, 40 pounds, something like that. There's a couple of them on some trucks. Anyway, yeah, it probably could. You know what it needs, though? I'm looking at the zoomed in picture, is some crawler stuff, because it's got a steel cable.
Definitely needs that.
Definitely needs a crawler rope, because it'd be lighter. Come on, Warren. What are you doing? Put a synthetic in this thing. But since it doesn't come with one, give crawler a call.
Because it has to lift its own weight, can it actually pick up more if it has a crawler rope on it?
Yes. It can do now 1,000 and... I don't know. It depends how long the pole is, right? Like if the line's all the way out and it's a vertical pole, I don't know how you're attaching that to your rafter, but you know, whatever.
Like 80-foot ceilings.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I got 60 foot.
Let's say 10 feet of steel cable probably weighs like 8 pounds or, you know, something. So it can lift 1,008 pounds with a crawler rope. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Perfect. Awesome.
With a crawler rope.
I like it. Let's do it.
Derek, did you listen to the episode about crawler?
I sure did.
Okay. It was good.
Am I supposed to comment on something in particular?
I didn't know if you had an opportunity to listen to it. So I was like, man, there's some really cool stuff coming out.
Yeah, I was talking to DJ before that. And he was telling me a little bit about it. And yeah, I'm excited. One of the things I should follow up with them on was, you know, they said like, we're trying to fall sort of in between the cheap stuff on Amazon and like the more premium stuff, whatever that may be. And I think he means on price, but quality is still going to be on the more premium stuff side. I don't know if it came across, but that's what I took away from it.
When you said that just now, you definitely made me feel like they were trying to fall in the middle on quality. They're like, we don't want our stuff to be too good.
But like, yeah, I mean, I think it's important to reiterate that, though.
High just quality at an affordable price.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's what they're shooting for.
I think there's no way to sort of compete with the cheapo Amazon ones that are like really like lying about what they're providing you, because they're saying like, oh, this is the length of it, but it's the diameter and vice versa.
And who you hold accountable is nobody, because Amazon is some Chinese company that you'll never get a hold of or do anything for you.
That's right. So
that's who's held accountable. No one.
So yeah, I'm excited to see what they're coming out with. And cause I want to like get a whole bunch more crawler stuff in my arsenal. I have like a soft shackle.
I was really sad to hear that all the synthetic winch products have a lifespan. I was like, oh man, that means I have to like buy stuff again. I already bought it once.
I'm excited because I'm going to replace mine with all the new crawler stuff.
Like new and improved. Is it going to be and improved?
And improved. I think so.
That's what I took away from it. So there'll also be like more stuff. It sounds like you guys brainstormed a whole new product.
I mean, it's going to be cool. I'm pretty sure of it.
I'm just glad that I keep my stuff. One, I don't use it very often. And two, I keep it in a cool, dry place. I don't know.
A dry place out of the sun,
I guess that's all that matters. So most of my stuff looks like it's in still pretty good shape. Although my winch rope is not crawler and it's original to the winch, and that guy could probably stand to be replaced because it has pulled Snow Day up a lot of shit. And yeah, I could probably stand to be replaced. So maybe a crawler rope is in its near future.
Yeah, I need probably a new winch rope soon. I need a 10-foot tree saver or 10-foot soft shackle, which you guys found out is almost dead on lengthwise.
Yeah. Yep. And the thing is, I love mine. I use it because I don't have a recovery point right now. I use it constantly.
You still don't have the bumper on there, Steve?
No.
I thought you were done. I thought it was already done, gone, welded, everything.
No, like, the bumper's done. I have to go through and clean the frame rail out. Like,
oh, that's right.
I have to get the frame rail prepped to get the supports in there is my problem.
Yep. I remember talking about this.
Yep. And I haven't done that. And like the bit to do all that is sitting right in my office. I have not brought my air hammer to work and I haven't brought my air hammer to work and I just haven't got the Jeep inside. This week would be a good week to do it because we don't have any trucks or anything scheduled.
There you go.
Yeah. And so like it'd be a perfect week to bring it in and work on it.
Make it happen.
I got other shit going on. Yep. We're trying to hit goals over here.
Well, best of luck to you.
Thank you. So just spending all that time. And then also Delia that polishes, she's out with strep because Anthony got strep and decided it would be a good idea to spread it around the shop, apparently.
Oh, how nice of him.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, stay the fuck home.
Yeah, stay the fuck
everybody,
home.
Everybody thinks that like your boss is going to be mad that you don't come to work and spread a disease around the fucking shop and everybody gets it. There was a week I came into work. I'd been sick for a few days. I come into work on a Wednesday because I've been sick for 2 days. I'm the only guy there on my side of the shop. Like there's six people on my side of the shop. They're like, oh yeah, everybody's sick. I'm like, well yeah, they fucking gave it to me because I'm on the uptick, or I gave it to them, one or the other. Yeah. But regardless,
right.
It's like, yeah, just don't come to work when you're fucking sick. Like,
yeah,
you don't do anyone any favors. Just then everybody gets sick.
Right. Exactly.
Because having one person out sucks, but having six people out is a fucking disaster.
Disaster. It wouldn't even matter about coming to work though, because the two of them hang out outside of work. And when they were hanging out at the bar, apparently they were like either sharing a cigarette or sharing a drink or something.
So it doesn't matter. It was done.
Yeah. Wouldn't even matter. So what are you going to do? But that's how it goes.
Is anybody else having a beer besides me?
I am not having a beer.
Derek?
I'm not having a beer.
Jesus Christ.
What did you crack open?
A non-beer.
Okay.
It's pretty late.
It's pretty late for who, motherfucker? It's 10. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have cursed. This is not Patreon. I apologize. And I've been drinking. But it's 10 o'clock here. It's late for me. It's not late for you.
I have a sleeping medication that I can't have beer too close to. So yeah, if I had gotten home on time and we started at 5, I would have had a beer. But all my beers are 7 to 8% or more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 2 beers and way too close to bedtime. So I got to be up early tomorrow.
Why are you rolling your eyes at having a sleeping medication that you have to not drink with?
Me?
Is that like a bummer? Yeah. Is it just
it's a bummer?
No, I wasn't rolling my my eyes. I didn't mean to.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of like I got this. I have to the sleeping medication.
I don't love talking about it, but Mike was giving me a hard time. There's not really a good way
just
to
drag it out.
I poke you. Yeah poke.
That's
poke. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
I mean, I don't mind talking about it, but I just No, I mean, I don't know, but yeah.
You could have used another excuse. You could have said that if I drink a beer, I'll have terrible diarrhea. And everybody would have been like, hey, whoa, hey.
Whoa, hey, yeah, sure.
Hey, whoa. But instead, you told us the truth.
Never mind.
You could have just lied. Just say every time I drink a beer, I get a raging boner, and it's really hard to podcast when I have a raging boner.
Because it just keeps hitting the desk.
This is not the Patreon.
Yeah, we'll continue this topic.
I'm done.
One way side tangent.
I'm done. That's funny. You guys just continue without me.
Do we need to cut this one out?
And I don't know. You can mark it if you want. I don't think it's a problem. You think it's a problem?
No, I think it's fine.
Yeah, this is way better than what we cut out from you in episode like 6 or 9.
You guys talk about that a lot. I don't even remember what I said.
Clearly.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm having a wild turkey and cola as usual.
Nice.
But it's not like super mixed. And also, I had a pretty rough weekend, so I'm not over here trying to like chug it. So
it's good.
Did you hit it hard this weekend, Steven?
Oh my God. Brendan was like, did you tie one on? And I was like, oh, I tied like 1.5 on. It was,
oh boy.
Friday night was rowdy. I tried to stop, but when you know a bunch of people, they want to like, hey man, keep the party going. What are you drinking? Like, no, I'm not drinking anything. I'm done. And then all of a sudden they show up with another one of what you're drinking. And then like we were at the PBR bar. And so there's always girls walk around with like buckets of like syringes that have something in it. And so like everybody's buying those. And it's like, you're just standing in a group and all of a sudden the girl turns to you with a syringe and like shoves it in your mouth. And you're like, this is not going to end well.
Where the hell, where were you? What is any of this?
Well, so we went down to the Louisville for the truck show, but at the, like,
oh, okay, gotcha.
At night when the truck show's over, they go over to PBR bar to get like, just to hang out. And so like, I don't know, like probably 50 or 60% of the people that are there at the Show and Shine event are all at the PBR bar afterwards. So it's a pretty cool place to go hang out and see everybody.
Got it.
That's where all the polishers are at and stuff like that. So, yep. It's one of the things.
Sounds like a good time.
I heard PBR bar and I was like, why aren't they just serving PBR? I didn't realize you're in Louisville. And yeah,
it's a whole thing.
Now it makes sense.
Right. Yep. So
I'm having a triptych. I'm going to say this wrong. Nectaranazor.
And sounds right.
Sure. It's a Nectaranazor and it's made with Nectaron and Citra hops. It's a double IPA like usual. 8.9 ABV. Yeah, it's good. It's delicious.
Can you spell it?
Nectaranazor. I don't have the can with me. I'm trying to remember.
That sounds like Nectaranazor.
Nectaranazor.
Well, I didn't know if it was like a dinosaur.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What's
it? It is. It's like a Godzilla looking guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nectaranazor. Yeah. Nectaranazor. It's a hazy double IPA, 8.9. It's delicious. It's triptych. What else is there to say?
Mm-hmm. None. Mike, right. Have you tried Banana Panic?
No.
It's a barrel-aged imperial stout. From on the website. From Triptych.
Oh, you're looking at their beers, but yeah. You're probably looking at all their beers, not what's available right now.
Nectaranazor. Yeah, it's a ZOR. You're right. Does look like Godzilla, sort of.
It's got Godzilla vibes.
This one was released on March 22nd, 2024. So you have not tried it because it just came out this past weekend.
The banana one?
Banana Panic. It is a barrel-aged imperial stout. It's 16.7%.
What the hell?
It's got bananas and cocoa nibs. Oh my God, it sounds so good.
Oh my God.
All right, I'm going to read the whole description because it sounds fantastic. A meticulously crafted imperial stout that has been aged for 24 months in a select blend of Buffalo Trace and Templeton barrels. This extensive aging imbues the beer with a rich complexity, marrying notes of bourbon oak and a subtle hint of smoke. Post-aging, the stout was conditioned on cocoa nibs and a mix of wild Thai and East Asian Cavendish bananas. This careful process introduces deep flavors of baker's chocolate and genuine banana notes, steering clear of any artificial laughable taffy flavors. Laughable taffy. That's great.
Oh my God.
And instead of offering a true banana essence, a masterful blend of richness and nuanced flavors, culminating to a smooth sweetness at the finish, complemented by a warming alcohol touch at 16.7% alcohol by volume, confirmed by external lab testing.
16.7 is so high. It may be higher than any Triptych beer ever had.
That is extremely high, and it sounds amazing, and I guarantee I couldn't drink a whole one.
Wow, I really want some. But yeah, it came out 4 days ago, and I haven't got any Triptych beer for like a week and a half now. So
they show this one in a bottle with a wax top.
I see that. So it's definitely
the good. Listeners don't see it though. So
I mean, if they type banana panic into Google, it's like the third or fourth thing down. So
yeah, but we don't want to make it hard for them. Gosh,
I don't know what else to tell you besides I put want it.
The image
could be,
yeah.
Mike, I need you to, if you ever go or have somebody go pick that up for you, also buy me some.
I mean,
or if there's somebody that listens to this podcast in Champaign, I will pay you to send me some, and Mike some, and Steve some. Steve's in Champaign.
Steve, how about you just go get us some since you live here?
Steve. Steve, please help.
Help. Steve, go to Triptych right now. Stop podcasting and drive to Triptych.
We'll take it from here. You go to Triptych.
See you guys.
Right, see you next week.
We could Steve, do that where we all taste it together on the same podcast. Right now. Steve's drinking banana. He's like, no, I'm drinking Wild Turkey. It just tastes like banana and chocolate. But look, it's dark. It's not beer.
Because Steve can get it right now, he should be in a banana panic as we speak.
He should be panicking. Well, he didn't know. This was released 4 days ago.
He should have panicked 4 days ago then.
He's panicking now because he wasn't panicking 4 days ago.
Oh my God.
I was panicking. I was like, no.
I'm glad I clicked on that one. I was like, banana, that's weird.
I'm glad you clicked on it too, because I just assumed that was something old, not something brand spank, but I sure hadn't heard of it, so I should have known.
Brand spank.
Oh man. Brand spank.
Because one another sad thing, this is not the same.
Steve's like, let's not.
All right. Never mind.
Do you want to tell us, Derek?
I was told not to. Okay, is they have a beer called Parker, a porter brewed for the best dog who ever lived. Beer's a really good boy.
Always around.
Caught me in the feels.
That's, yeah. Well, it would, yeah. If you don't want to lose a dog.
All right, let's stop talking about sad stuff. But let's talk about off-road things. Yeah, let's talk about off-road things. Mike?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
Well, oh no, Mike, what'd you do?
Oh no,
Richard.
If you listened last week, then you know that I've been going through some leaf spring debacles. And since then, I think I have cut the leaf springs off the truck, like right next to the eyelet, because I couldn't get the bolts out. I cut them. I sliced them off. And I threw the leaf springs in the scrap pile. And I unbolted. Thankfully, the bolts that I put in a decade ago, they came right out, like four, I don't know, half inch bolts or whatever. I took the bolts out of the shackles, or I'm sorry, the hangers. I brought the hangers to work. I attempted to press the bolts out of the front hangers, and in turn ended up pressing the sleeves out through a hole that's not that big. And so I can't even describe like what, like dimple dyed my hangers basically. And so I used an air hammer to kind of form them back into like the shape that they're like the direction they should go. And then I used a press with two large flat plates to smash the hole back into its original shape. And on those, I planned a weld a washer on the outside to give it a little extra support since it's been bent. The rear, I cut the head off the bolt so that I could put something very, very like small diameter, like the same diameter as the bolt head. And I pressed them right out. It was no big deal. It was very easy. And so now the hangers are ready to go. Derek's leaf springs, which the eyelet I thought may have been too big, does fit. I don't know exactly how much clearance I'm going to have. Because I kind of had to mock it up. You know, I'm just like holding it with my hand, like looking through. And I'm like, that looks good. But it seems like they're going to work.
Sweet.
So the question I have now is, can I leave? You know how the bottom leaf spring on those leaf packs has like a riveted in encapsulator? Like it's a thing that holds all the leaf springs together so they don't come like out sideways, right?
Right.
So if I leave the bottom leaf and I keep the two top leaves and I remove the third one down, is there any way that I can remove that leaf while keeping those encapsulators installed? Like I had to wrap my head around it. I'm like, okay, like I can just take the leaf springs loose. I can like, you know, C-clamp them together. But once I release the pressure of the C-clamp, that spring is going to be pushing hard against the other ones. And I can't just slide it out.
Oh, no, it'll come right out. I've had those springs apart.
It will come right out?
Yeah, I think so. If it doesn't, just slide that encapsulator thing all the way to the, like one end. That's what you do. Because the,
I can't
bottom,
slide it and rivet it on.
No. Take the whole bottom leaf spring. It's going to fall out. And then you just slide the whole leaf spring to one end and then slide the other leaf spring out. You'll be fine.
So you're saying that once I get the tension off, like once I take them all apart, I should just be able to slide them apart and then put them back together.
Yes.
Okay. I believe you. I was just in my mind picturing like the leaf springs pushing against each other and like creating tension and me not being able to slide anything in any direction.
There's, but it's there's only one clamp on the whole leaf spring pack, right? There's not one on each end of it.
There's one on each end. Attached it's on the bottom leaf. It's yet they're both attached to the bottom leaf. They're riveted on.
You're going to be able to do it. I don't remember that being a problem. I've had those leaf springs apart before to like grind them down, put molly coat on them.
And obviously you left the things on because they still have the factory rivets in them.
Well, I bent them open because I had to get the actual leaf. I took that leaf off. So that's what you can do is you just bend it open.
Okay, bend it open. I was worried if I bent them fore and aft that it would mess them up or something. Like they would.
I don't think you'll need to. If you're not planning on like painting them or whatever, just you'll be able to slide that third leaf out. I'm confident.
Okay. Well, that is the plan. I don't know if it matters which leaf I take out. I just assumed I would take the third one because the way that the top leaf bent last time, it bent right after the eyelet. And I was thinking if I took the next leaf down out, it might be more likely to bend.
Yep.
But if it's there for support, then it might be better. So I thought the third one down would be the best option.
Well, it depends how it bent, right? Did yours bent up, right? Or no?
It bent like from the eyelet up and then back down to the pack.
I don't think the leaf underneath it does anything in that particular situation.
Okay.
But maybe not. You should have it. I think you're taking the right leaf out.
Well, that's personally the plan. We're going to see how it goes. Hopefully the truck doesn't sit all wonky when I put it back together.
Hopefully it doesn't sit too low. What's the total thickness of that pack versus your pack? Is it way thick? Like at the
no, currently pin? It's probably the same because right now I have three and an overload, but obviously the overload doesn't do anything except for hamper up travel.
Right.
So it's actually the same now. So it might be lower based only on the fact that it's one less spring.
I guess what I would say is before you take that third leaf out, if the pack that I gave you is similar in thickness to your pack without the overload, don't take a leaf out. If it's thicker, especially if going to three leaves and that pack is roughly the same thickness as your pack without the overload, then take the leaf out.
Hold on. You're saying based on pack thickness or based on spring rate?
No, well, who knows what the spring rate is, Mike? Like that depends on like the length of each leaf and the thickness of each leaf and a whole bunch of factors. I'm just like rule of thumb, thicker pack, stiffer, thinner pack, less stiff. That's not necessarily true.
So you're saying that I should put the truck together with the pack exactly as it is just to see how it sits? Because it is the same thickness.
No, I'm saying compare the... Because what?
I had four leaves, and now I have four leaves. I was going to go down to three. Had,
okay.
I had three and an overload. Away. I'm going to have four.
Okay, so then go to three. Never mind. Forget I said anything.
You know what I'm saying, though, right? Like, I had three and an overload, and now I just have four without an overload. So overall, the thickness is the same, but the way that they operate is different.
Yes, I'm saying compare. Never mind. It's fine. Go to three.
Okay. If all else fails, I do have some zero rates laying around that are an inch tall if I need for some reason to make it taller.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did you figure out like if you need to sleeve the bolt?
Oh, I was wrong. The front hanger actually was just a nut on the inside. It's just inside the front hanger on an OBS, man. Like, I don't know who designed this thing. The way that you access the nut so that you can take the leaf spring out is you don't.
What is it? Just welded in?
No, it's not welded in. It's sitting inside a pocket that you can't access from anywhere except for above the frame. And so maybe on a stock pickup, you could somehow get a wrench down inside there, but I assume that like things would interfere and like you definitely can't see it. You would have to feel for it. So once I had the hanger off the truck, I could see it. I'm like, oh, there's the nut. But when installed on the truck, it is invisible without a mirror. So weird. It just seems kind of strange that that's how it's designed. It's like, hey, the way you get to this nut is you don't.
I mean, on a GMT 800, it's the same. You have to stick the wrench up, but it's from the bottom.
From the bottom would make more sense. At least right. You can look at it.
Yeah, that's weird that. You think that if it was like, wouldn't that thing just fill up with dirt too, or did it?
No, actually.
All right.
Now it's also possible that I'm using different holes. That hanger had six holes.
Oh.
I'm using obviously four of them. Currently, two of them stick up above the frame. So it's possible that I was originally using the top four and that nut was accessible, but because of the way that I installed it on snow day to like get the angle right and everything, I've actually hidden the bolt. Maybe I hit
right.
The nut.
I think you hit the nut. I think I you're right. It. I think it hangs down below the frame when it's in the normal position.
But because I moved it to a section of frame that was lower, I had to make it higher to keep the same pinion angle.
Or there's a hole in the frame where it used to be.
Oh, that could be too. Which I guess I could still also just drill a hole in the frame there so I could access that nut.
Yeah, you could.
I might. I'm not sure. We'll figure it out.
Well, we've solved all of Snow Day's problems. One of Snow Day's problems.
It's so funny how that project, like, I'm in my mind thinking about replacing a set of leaf springs. I'm like, that'll take a couple hours, and instead it's going to be like 20 hours later, I'm going to have this thing fucking done. Like
20 hours later.
I still need to figure out U-bolts, too. Like, I don't know if there's a local source for U-bolts. Like, back in Danville, I would just go to Burke Spring. You just walk in there and just tell them. They just make them right then and there. But I don't know in Lafayette, like, who is just the shop I walk into. I'm like, I need this exact spec. And they, like, bend them up real quick and hand them to me.
I've never had that. Like need, I guess I've always just gone to Rural King and grabbed whatever length and size I need. And
I guess I haven't always been able to find that big of U-bolts.
Yeah. I say 90% of the time they have four in stock of what I need. So
I would expect a big rig shop should be able to do it, but maybe they can't do that small of a bend radius. Or square.
I mean, all else fails, I can probably just call up Complete and just tell him, and he can probably find something for me too.
I'm 100% sure that Chris can do that for you.
I'm sure Chris could. I just feel like if I could just go local and buy U-bolts, it seems like a simple thing to do, assuming that a local shop can make custom U-bolts.
Chris might be able to get you like a nice plated set. Before, like,
plated would be nice too.
Before I was like, you know, aware of complete off-road. I haven't put U-bolts on my truck in a long time, but I would buy from, I think, WFO because they had plated or rough stuff. I don't remember which, but one of them had plated and I was like, yes, that please. Like, I live in the Midwest at the time. No, like, salt is a thing. Actually. Like, yeah. So, but call Chris. I'm sure he can hook you up.
That may just be the move. So yeah, that's my plan. I need to figure out some bolts, hopefully a local hardware store. We have an Ace Hardware here and they usually have just about every piece of hardware imaginable. So I'm hoping I can get some 5/8 and some 9/16 bolts. Or I guess I go 14, 16, whatever, it doesn't matter.
I want to talk about you putting a Dana 60 in Snow Day next, since you've got some traction on the rear suspension.
Oh, I see. So since I'm putting the axle back where it belongs, now I'm going to do a somewhat custom install. Like, if it was axle to axle, it would be the same. But like, I have to figure out the high steer. I want to move the axle forward an inch. Like, there's going to be a lot.
Why can't you just put the Dana 60 in where it's at? We talked about my suspension last week about, like, here's what I can do in steps. Can you just get rid of the high steer, put a regular tie rod on, which is probably the same one that's on your truck now?
Maybe.
I'm pretty confident they're both one's a 3/4 ton Ford front axle, and this one, the one you're putting in it, is a 1 ton Ford front axle.
Yeah. So this should be the same.
Should be the same.
Length and everything.
Leaf springs mount the same.
Yep.
Like, you need brake lines, I think, right? And
something that would be, it'd be a little different with the 2500 HD brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe not on the truck side. But yeah, you probably need a brake line. And then like a adapter U-bolt, and then gears. Gears is the hardest part, but you're going to re-gear the rear, which is easy.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, it wouldn't be hard if, going by that logic, I would have to weld a couple of shock tabs on each side.
Oh yeah. That's a Saturday.
Yeah, that and the high steer, or not the high steer, just mounting a ram in general, or welding a ram mount to the axle.
Oh yeah, that too.
So that I could use the setup that I have now, assuming the tie rod is the same. Like, if it was in the same place and the same, like, length and everything worked, it wouldn't be a ton of work.
And then you have 513s, which would be really nice off-road.
If I'm going to go to the trouble to put the Dana 60 in, I think I'm going to get Wagoneer front springs because they offset, I think, an inch.
Oh, the axle forward?
Yeah, I'd put new leaf springs in the front and move the axle forward an inch. And then just kind of see where everything falls and then decide what needs to change.
Are they 47s too?
Yeah, they're 47, but nice. they offset the pin an inch.
That's then you're done. That solves all of your problems. Then you can run 40s.
Maybe.
If the axle's forward an inch.
I mean, I know that I could run 40s. But that doesn't necessarily solve everything, because moving everything by an inch sounds like so little, but it changes so much. Like, will I need to re-weld the shock towers? Will I need to move the steering box? Like, there are so many things that could change by just moving it a little bit. And I don't know.
Yeah. Well, swap the axle into your current springs and then someday go to the wagon. To or like buy them, have them, and then if you're like, hey, when I do this, this is in the way, all right, well,
it's just another thing, man.
Yeah, I know. It's, I don't want to make it be like, well, it's so easy, but if you don't move it forward, it's a lot easier than if you move it forward, right?
Yeah, for sure, because all the geometry stays the same essentially. So yeah, you're right.
But here, I'll be my own devil's advocate. You haven't broken that axle that's under there for a long time.
And which is why I'm not chomping at the bit to replace it. That just kind of works most of the time. So.
And it has more clearance than a Dana 60. So if you're not going to 40s, your benefit is you get better gears, but then slightly worse clearance. So What
yeah, and I don't plan to go to 40s unless I need to. Like, if the 38s keep working, I'm going to keep rocking them.
For sure.
Because they're crazy expensive and they work so well.
I wouldn't change them. Mm-hmm. But if, okay, I'm spending your money. If you okay. went to 40s, would you go with the same tire?
Oh, man, probably. I mean, I don't know what else I would use. I've been more happy with this set of tires than any off-road tire I've ever had. So why would I change tires?
What is the cost of that? $600 a tire?
Probably. I don't know. Well, for a 40-inch Baja.
That's not bad. $2,500 for a set of four. In the last decade. So extrapolate that out for a wheeling trip.
620.
620 a tire?
Yeah. So $2,500.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that'll be my next tire. No, absolutely not. Ooh, Baja buses are almost under $500. Almost.
What was that new Baja Boss? Oh, it was like a lightweight, right? Tire.
It was I forgot what did they call it? It was a two ply sidewall rated rather than Baja three.
Boss XS, is that what it is?
Yes, I think.
Baja Boss XS.
Baja Boss X? Wait, is that what it is?
It's the XS. DOT, four ply sidewall. There was some reason you didn't want them.
Okay, so I think I thought that the three ply or like a load range C was six ply.
And they're 2,680 pounds a piece at 25 PSI.
That's why I didn't want them.
Oh, because your rig weighs more than 11,000 pounds?
No. First of all, that's like, it's like 10,500 pounds. With a trailer, I had more than that on the rear.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Wow. That's easy. Just stay below the speed rating.
Sure.
Goodish.
What's the speed rating?
I don't know. Fast, way faster run. If you're gonna trailer over the weight, the rated weight of the tire, just take your time.
Go slow. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was going slow because freaking I didn't have any power.
Yeah.
I just wonder, is the Baja Boss XS that much better than the Baja Boss?
It's silica reinforced compound. So I think it's like a softer compound. Still DOT certified. It's got a stronger sidewall, which is good because we know what happened to my sidewall. Well, mm-hmm. It was under that was okay. Wait. Yeah, I had a sidewall puncture and hammers on a Baja Boss, and then I shredded one, and then I had a sidewall puncture on a Maxxis Trepidor radial. But, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I actually don't know what tire I want to go to next.
Wait, there's a Baja Boss X also?
That's what I was like.
Hold on. Yeah, it says the Baja Boss XS blends the functional technology that revolutionized the mud train market with the Baja Boss MT with the competition-proven extreme use.
It's a sticky.
Of the Baja Boss X. The XS is like a mixture. So wait, what's the Baja Boss X now?
It's a sticky. It's not DOT certified.
Oh.
So I think the XS is kind of like the one you like what you have, right? The Pro X is a sticky with like crazy lugs. The XS is probably stickier but stronger, and then the regular Baja Boss is like the, I'm not going to say it's for street because I beat the shit out of mine, but is the least extreme. So yeah, the XS is probably a good tire.
Maybe.
I probably wouldn't be unhappy with it. Okay, it says load range B in a 40, and I think that scared me.
Okay, now I just got to know the Baja Boss MT. What is it rated at? I got to know. Because if it's exactly the same.
No, it's not. It's 3,100 or 3,200, I think. It's a load C.
You're right. It's 3,195 instead of 2,680. So yeah, another 500 pounds of tire or whatever.
Yep.
Okay, all right. It is rated slightly less.
I do love Mickey Thompson tires. They have some really good stuff going. But I'm like, maybe I should try something new. I like the Maxxis. I haven't really wheeled them much, but I'm also going to spend a bunch of money on shocks, so I don't plan on buying tires anytime in the immediate future. But like, once those tires, they're not going to wear out. I think I'll replace them before they wear out, but like, they're old. They're 2015 date codes, so like, they're not going to last forever. I need to start thinking about like what the next tire would be. And I was thinking like Baja Boss AT, because like, I don't really need a mud terrain, but oh, they don't make it into 40.
Now that you're West Coast wheeler, you just need an all terrain. You don't even need a mud terrain.
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't
want
to go more aggressive.
I'd be so unhappy. Like if it was like, all right, it's raining.
Raining would be just fine, but no,
raining on like Fordyce has mud on it. Like,
no, that's a good point. Yeah.
Rubicon has mud on it in some spots. Like it's not Moab. Yeah.
So you probably wouldn't want an all terrain. You'd probably want to go at least as aggressive as you are now.
Yeah, probably. I am leaning towards Maxxis Razor again, though. That was the tire that I wanted to get before the Baja Boss deal of the century that I got. And they look kind of cool. They're kind of like a creepy crawler. Ray's got them. Okay. Connor's got them. They both think they're great. So I don't know.
I feel like I get excited about a light truck tire that's like very smooth, like a Michelin. And I get excited about something that's like really aggressive and gnarly, but something about a mud terrain tire anymore, like a Razor or a Baja Boss, I'm just like, that looks like it's loud.
Well, the not Baja Boss is not loud.
Not to say that aggressive tires aren't loud. I'm just saying that when I see a mud terrain tire, my first thought is that's probably loud.
I don't know what you mean by that, Mr. Pro XS.
Oh no, they're extremely, extremely loud. I just feel like the benefit is they're extremely loud, but the traction is insane. Whereas when I see a mud terrain, I'm like, that probably grips okay, but it's probably loud.
I don't know. I had only good things to say about the Baja Boss.
I will say that for a mud terrain, I've been very impressed. Like watching your tires work for not being that aggressive, especially in Midwest situations. Like I've never seen you wheel out west except for in like videos. But for Midwest wheeling, the Baja Bosses were maybe the most impressive mud terrain tire I've ever seen.
I liked them. I liked them a lot. I mean, I haven't tried Nitto Trail Grapplers. They're roughly the same, like, aggressiveness. But yeah, the Maxxis ones are like, I don't know. They've got really big, like, side. They have a lot of side lugs.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I'm looking at them right now. The Razor.
Yeah.
It does have a pretty, aggressive sidewall, but it has a lot going on in the sidewall.
Yeah. For a radial, it has a lot going on.
It's a good looking tire.
Whereas the like Trepidor radial has like almost nothing on the sidewall. It's pretty limited.
Whereas the Trepidor Bias is so sexy.
It's the best tire.
Treps.
Also an option. They're if really you're not expensive gonna, though.
So what? Just gonna.
And
let's
I
see what the reviews are. Only 5 stars.
780 a tire, Mike.
Look at him.
750.
Look at him.
I just can't. It's too much money.
It's only $3,000.
It's $4,000 with a spare.
Yeah. They're DOT approved for highway use. They recommend you go 65.
No thanks. I don't think they're the right choice, you know?
Okay.
Only because I've heard of some people being like, it's not as good as you think. But tell me if I'm wrong, peeps.
Okay. If you're not going to get Trepidors because they're not as good as you think, then you really think that the Razor is going to really blow you away? I mean,
I've only heard good things about it.
I'm just saying that looking at the two, if the Trep doesn't do well, is the Razor really going to do well?
I'm sure that the Trepidor is better than the Razor from a traction off-road standpoint.
That's all I'm saying.
But it's $1,000 more, if not more than that.
They look 1,000 times better.
Okay. I can get a Maxxis Razor for $420, Mike.
That is a lot less money.
Yep.
Granted, wow, that's a 35, but that's all right.
No, it's a 40.
Nah, it's 35.
Okay. All right, we're done podcasting now. I'm done talking about tires with Mike. That's we're having a tiff right now in real time.
That's what Mike does.
If I was in person, I would slap you.
Yeah, twack me.
Twack you.
Oh, man.
Good grief.
Good grief.
That's indeed. All right, Derek. Both of us have traction right now because we both have tires with tread on them. So we don't need to get into an argument about tires until we're out of tread.
And they're not.
And well, we don't even mention those tires anymore. Aren't we done mentioning those tires? Can we just put that chapter behind us entirely?
I'll have Kyle put in a beep.
Whenever we say it, it's just. We just say dim.
Yeah.
Yes. Steve, what do you think? Did we podcast?
I think we podcasted. We talked about all things.
Should we move it on over?
Yeah, let's move it.
This was the BS sode.
Oh man, there have been so many of those, Derek.
This one was really BS-y. We were quite scattered. We didn't even follow our new template.
I tried.
Yeah, I think I'm mostly to blame. Also, I totally forgot to shout out to Adam Bartram, who sent me a message suggesting looking at the like air bump like placeholder things, which are pretty cool. Like if I want to like plan ahead for running air bumps, you can get like this little, like, it's basically just aluminum slug that's threaded for like a poly bump or even like running my GM style progressive like closed cell foam bump stops, but in like an air bump can clamp thingy. So it's a good option for those who want to plan ahead but haven't yet saved up for the massive cost impact of air bumps. And then Dave Hansen was like, get air bumps, your back will appreciate it. So
basically
he's probably right.
So he's saying that there's like a mock-up style air bump that you can use just for fitment and then you buy the actual ones?
Yeah, I think it's like when you're building a rig, you can put the air bump clamp thing in your frame or whatever while you're doing it. And then you run, you know, this aluminum slug with like a poly bump at the end of it. And then when you can save up for air bumps, then you just slide them in, right?
Yep, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so it's definitely convenient. So if when I'm building my shock hoop, I'm like, oh man, if I run air bumps, they would go here. Then I might do that.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So, yeah.
Funny enough, Adam Bartram also contacted me asking about OBS SAS stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I told him a few things. He said that he's in the midst of trying to find a truck reminiscent of a truck he had when he was younger. And he wants to build that truck into a solid axle rig.
Heck yeah.
So good luck to Adam.
I think we're done podcasting.
Steve, you want to call those partners?
Yes, the partners. Go check out Complete Off-Road at 563-583-5363. Give them a call if you need anything for your rig. Check out Crawler Off-Road. They're going to have some new stuff coming here pretty darn quick. So make sure you check out crawleroffroad.com for all of your synthetic recovery needs. Go check out Morflate, M-O-R-R-F-L-A-T-E.com for all of your inflation and deflation needs. Also adding stuff to their inventory all the time. New and innovative air inflating things of that nature and stuffs. They've also got that patch repair kit thing that we have that's pretty cool. Go check out
Glue Tread.
Yeah, that's what they have in there. It's Glue Tread. And now I'm off my track. Go check out Off-Road Anonymous, Jacob Tuma, who we had on two episodes ago. Soon to be Jacob. Go check him out for any of your fabrication stuff. If you need to know what he does, just refer back to that episode and go see what Jacob does. And check out toolboxwidget.com. They have all of your organizational stuff for your tools. Make sure you get your tools organized so you're not screaming because you lost that 10 millimeter wrench for the 18th time. Be more like Mike. Mike uses his toolbox nice and organized.
That's right. Right.
And last but not least, go check out SummerShineSupply.com. Yes, that's my website. You need to get your shit cleaned up. Go check it out. I've got all kinds of stuff here to help you get the winter funk or the trail funk off your rig. Foam cannons, wash soap, all-purpose cleaners, tire dressings, interior dressings, things of that nature.
Salad dressings?
No salad dressings. Sorry about you. Yeah, I understand.
When are you going to come out with... summer shine salad pizzazz. I don't know. I tried to come up with another S. All right. Sorry for interrupting.
You're good. I think that's it. So go check out all of our partner companies. And if you need any of the things from them, they will help you get what you need. Thanks for joining us for episode 209. It was good. Even though it was just a bunch of bullshit, I'm happy with it. You guys happy with it?
I'm happy with it.
I'm happy if you're happy.
It's on the books.
That's all there is. There is no more.
All right. Until next time, we'll catch you on the trail.